Hi, I'm Mary Harrell from Mater Dei Radio. Well, pull out your notebooks and sharpen your pencils. We're about to go back to Catholic apologetic school. Catholic Answers apologist Carlo Broussard was kind enough to come back and take a little deeper look into his new book called Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. Carlo's book takes a great many objections to the faith that we hear all the time in the culture today, from how can I believe in God when he allows bad things to happen, to how can I join a church that has so many boring rituals, to which I say, the smells and the bells, they really are the best. Don't knock the smells and the bells. But today, Carlo's going to walk us through some of the very basic apologetic strategies in preparing the way for truth. Carlo, thanks for joining us again.
Hey, Mary, you're welcome. It's great to be on with you.
Okay, we're going to launch right into just the very beginning, where we start. How can I believe in absolute truth when there is no such thing?
That's right. So this is the essence of relativism, right? The philosophical worldview that states there is no truth independent of what you or I happen to think. There's no absolute truth, in other words. And this is definitely an obstacle that many face. For example, in a 2017 study, it was identified that doubt in objective truth is a major reason why millennials are abandoning God in Christianity. Mm. And American philosopher Alan Bloom, in his work, The Closing of the American Mind, he observed that there's one thing a professor can be absolutely certain of, and that's almost every student that enters the university believes or says he or she believes that truth is relative.
Ugh.
So this is definitely something that is prevalent in our culture. And even, you know, Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, as Cardinal Ratzinger in his book Truth and Tolerance identified relativism as the most profound difficulty of our time. So how do we remove this obstacle? Well, in my book, Mary, I give three strategies. And I will definitely be able to get to two of them here, maybe even three mm-hmm. in this segment here. But let's just look at strategy one. What we want to do is we want to show that relativism is a self-refuting proposition. It's self-referentially incoherent, to be with the philosophical language there. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that the relativist is actually – in as much as a relativist asserts relativism, he pulls the rug out from underneath his feet. So if you're talking to a relativist and you're in a conversation and you propose some truth about your faith and they say, well, that might be true for you, but not for me. Well, why do you think that? Well, I don't think there's any absolute truth. We could simply respond with a question and ask, well, do you think that's absolutely true? If the person responds, yes, it's absolutely true that there is no absolute truth, well, then you can simply point out to them, well, isn't that a contradiction to say that it's absolutely true that there's no absolute truth? I mean, that's like saying I exist and I don't exist in the same respect at the same place and time.
Right.
and we laugh when we hear that every time without fail. When I propose that question to the position of relativism, everybody laughs because they immediately recognize that it violates a fundamental principle of reason, namely the principle of non-contradiction. Something cannot both be and not be in the same respect, the same place and time.
But we see that so often in culture today anyway, of people identifying, the woman that wants to identify as a paraplegic even though she's perfectly able to walk. How do you counter that bizarre stance?
Right. Well, that's one. That's actually strategy three, because what that shows is that in strategy three, I coach the reader to show that relativism leads to absurdities. Mm. Because if there is no truth about human nature, well, then I can do whatever I want, right?
Right.
So if I am biologically a male, but I identify as a female, well, then I can perform any sort of surgical procedures and live as a female, dress as a female, act as a female. If relativism is true, then I am a female simply because I think or feel that I am.
Right.
Or, for example, if somebody says, well, I think I'm a cat. Well, if relativism is true, then that person is a cat, even though biologically they belong to the human species, right?
Right.
Or for, as you mentioned, Mary, Chloe Jennings White, right? PhD.
Right.
And she asserts that she desires to and identifies herself as paraplegic when she's, you know, in good physical, healthy condition. So these are the absurdities that relativism leads to. And in conversation, you want to point out these absurdities in order to get the person to see that, well, maybe this relativism thing is not as good as contemporary culture makes it out to be, right?
Right.
But fundamentally, it's incoherent. If it violates the principle of non-contradiction, Mary, then it's not true. So watch this. If I can prove that the statement, there's no absolute truth, is false, which we've already done, showing that it's self-refuting, well, then guess what? The opposite is true. There is absolute truth. It's as simple as that. And if we can acknowledge that there is objective truth, well, then we're able to proceed forward in our inquiry to try to figure out what that truth is. But we at least have to get this starting point correct, that there is truth.
That seems like almost the most difficult roadblock to clear for people, because today in this upside down world, people have taken this upside down nature to truth and made it their entire identity, literally their identity. And so when you tell them that their identity is wrong, they take it as an attack on themselves, an attack on their very person, on their dignity, as bizarre as that is. And it seems like today you offend people by telling them the truth.
That's right. That's one of the major, another one of the major roadblocks, and I actually deal with this in chapter 3 of the book. And one of the major roadblocks that people face to embracing the objectivity of truth is because they perceive that to assert an objective truth necessarily follows from that, that I'm being a bigot, I'm being intolerant, I'm being mean-spirited. Right. When in fact, if you look at it carefully, as human beings, we're naturally ordered toward the truth, to know the truth. And the truth is perfective of our human nature, Mary. Mm-hmm. So inasmuch as I assert that which is true and try to encourage you to embrace that truth, in essence, what I'm doing is I'm encouraging you to embrace that which I perceive to be perfective of your nature. And if perfective of your human nature, then that which I perceive to be true is for your human happiness. Mm-hmm. So when I encourage you to embrace truth and I say, hey, Mary, that's wrong, this is true, embrace this truth, in essence, what I'm doing is I'm loving, because what is love? To will the good of another. What is the good? That which is perfective of some of a human nature. What is perfective of human nature? Truth. Mm-hmm. So when I encourage you to embrace the truth, I am loving in as much as I'm willing your human happiness. So our contemporary culture has totally flipped it upside down to say that to say there is truth means you're not loving me, right? If you say I'm wrong, you're not loving me. Mm. Well, it's actually the opposite. If I acknowledge a position to be false and that you need to embrace the truth, that's an act of love.
Right.
So it's the total opposite. So all this abstract thinking of truth and objective truth, the rubber hits the road, because in essence, it's an act of love to encourage someone to embrace the truth, and which necessarily involves identifying some opinions to be false.
Carly, you know that Fulton Sheen line, there are not over 100 people in the United States who hate the Catholic Church. There are millions, whoever, who hate what they wrongly believe to be the Catholic Church, which is quite
right.
Do you think there are any really true relativists in the world, or are there people who just think they are relativists, but they're just right. in denial about the moral absolutes they truly hold?
Amen. You hit the nail on the head there, Mary. I mean, there are probably only a hand few
yeah.
who are like trying to follow the logical absurdities of their relativistic position and just doing whatever the heck they want and saying, well, everybody else should be able to do whatever they want.
Right.
But the majority of people may be relativists from the armchair in their seat when they're philosophizing, or at least trying to philosophize. But in practice, they're not. I mean, anybody in the grocery store line, if you cut somebody, they're going to become angry. and the response, well, this is, you know, it's good for me relative to my set of beliefs. I perceive it to be good and true for me to cut you in line and to get to the clerk ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I appeal to relativism to justify my actions in that individual, in that scenario, no one in practice is going to accept your relativistic view and say, oh, well, if it's true for you, it might not be true for me, but just go right on ahead and do it.
It's funny. Right? In those practical applications, it becomes pretty clear pretty quickly that it's relativism is not the position of the sane. Carlo, let's take one more. I think we've got time here. Your second one. How can I believe in truth when people believe so many different things?
That's right. The difference of opinion and beliefs among many serves as an obstacle to embracing objective truth. So notice the conclusion, no absolute truth. They're making that conclusion based upon the premise people believe so many different things. But in philosophy, Mary, we call that a non sequitur. Mm. The conclusion just simply doesn't follow from the premise. I mean, just because people disagree or differ in their opinions, it doesn't follow there's no absolute truth about the matter. So, for example, in the past, people disagreed about the shape of the earth, whether it was flat or spherical. Does that mean that the earth has no shape? Of course not, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't be here, right? So just because people disagree about something, it doesn't necessarily follow there's no absolute truth about it. Now, here's the key to point out. It is true that difference of opinions does make it hard to arrive at knowledge of the absolute truth, but it doesn't mean there is no absolute truth. So it's very important that we point that out to people to know that, yeah, people disagree, people have different opinions, but that doesn't mean there's no absolute truth. We just got to roll up our sleeves, work a little harder to sift through all the different opinions and try to figure out which one of these opinions or beliefs is true, does conform to reality. And that requires a little legwork, but hey, we got to be willing to do it because the truth is what will make us free. If I can throw in Jesus there, John 8:32.
There you go. Legwork doesn't really fit into 140 characters on Twitter, though. It's easier to just throw out an insult and be done.
You got it right, Mary. Amen to that. And that's why modern contemporary culture does make it hard to work through these ideas and trying to arrive at truth.
Excellent. Well, Carlo, we are going to come back and hit more of these objections at a later time. Thanks so much for being with us today. Class is dismissed, but keep your pencils and notebooks handy. Carlo, just so our listeners can find your book, quickly tell us where they should go.
Well, they can go to shop.catholic.com to purchase the book. And if they just want to go to catholic.com, there's ways to get to the book from catholic.com. They can also follow me at my website, carlobroussard.com.
Awesome. Carlo, we'll have you back again. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mary. God bless you.